The content of this program is intended for the blind and print impaired audience. Hi, this is Avra Lewis from NC Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Ebony and Essence magazines. The first article is titled, Cornel West Unloads on Fox News Guest During Defund Police Conversation. Ever the outspoken pundit, Harvard professor Cornel West went on Sean Hannity's Fox News show on Tuesday night and did not hold back. During a segment on defunding the police, West unloaded on civil rights attorney and frequent Fox contributor Leo Terrell. The sparring match started after Hannity opened up the conversation by rattling off a few of the headlines that deal with extreme cases of police interactions and protesters. He then asked West if he supports, quote unquote, this madness of defunding the police. West started his responses by recognizing the heaviness of the day, stating that hours before this segment, George Floyd was laid to rest in Houston 2 weeks after his death at the hands of four Minneapolis police officers. He went on to say that he believes police interactions with protesters and within communities boils down to respect. You have to have police who respect the community, West asserted. There has to be some community control, accountability of both citizens and police, and recognizing that the deeper issues of poverty, dilapidated schools, housing, shattered families, communities, not enough jobs with a living wage, that generates a despair that the police do have to come to terms with. But there has to be democratic control over the police. Hannity countered with an often used Republican talking point, saying that the majority of liberal cities have for decades been run by Democrats who have allowed the education systems to decline. West concurred in the case of Chicago's former mayor, Rahm Emanuel, of whom he says he was not a fan. But West also stated that it goes beyond that. When Hannity looked at Terrell to get his take on Democratic-run cities and where they failed America's children, Terrell focused his response on West, saying that the professor won't answer Hannity's question because he's just interested in giving, quote-unquote, old talking points. After Terrell told West he wanted to speak to him, black man to black man, the segment went completely left. West asked Terrell what his talking points are and showed disdain over the fact that the attorney had chosen to disrespect him on the day Brother Floyd is put in his grave. At one point, West asked Terrell who he was tied to and questioned, who do you think you are, my brother? The show had completely gone off the rails by the time West told Terrell, check yourself, Negro. Hannity concluded the interview after Terrell asked several times for a producer to cut West's mic. Earlier in the night, West appeared on Anderson Cooper, where the civil rights activist shared his deep respect for the Floyd family and the black people who have chosen to love despite their oppression. The next article is titled, Ebony Hosts Roundtable to Address Systemic Racism in the Criminal Justice System. Please note that this is a past event. Partnering with community leaders, Hollywood elite, and influencers including EqualJusticeNow.org, ACLU, NAACP, National Association of Baptist Pastors, Fox Sports, Mike Hill, and more. This Friday, June 5th, 2020, Ebony is hosting a town hall to address systemic racism at all levels of the criminal justice system. The online event examines the many challenges that exist for Black people, highlighting bail and unnecessary sentencing for Black men and women living in the United States. For 75 years, Ebony and Jet have been the authoritative voice highlighting the injustices of Black Americans, from featuring the open casket of the lynching of 14-year-old Emmett Till to the footage of the brutality against nonviolent protesters during the civil rights movement to the need for bail and prison reform. Throughout the years, Ebony has shown the development of Black lives from athletes, inventors, media moguls, and a president. With this rich heritage and legacy, we cannot chart any evolution on the cessation of Black lynchings. Friday's discussion will feature interviews with experts and thought leaders such as Fox Sports Mike Hill, Equal Justice Now founder Tony Smith Jr., Reverend Samuel C. Tolbert, Jr., State Representative Sherry Gay, State Representative Tanisha Yancey, ACLU Policy Counsel Kimberly Budding Crawford, tech entrepreneur David Bullock, and attorneys Herbert Sanders and George Sanchez, and representatives of the National Baptist Convention of America and the NAACP. The lawlessness and violence that continue to take the lives of our brothers and sisters, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, are just among the thousands that continue to cry out that Black Lives Matter, said Chief Communications Officer of Ebony, Sabrina A. Taylor. We need all hands on deck to help us organize and strategize about coming together during this critical time. Friday's event will live stream on Zoom, Ebony's Facebook, and YouTube pages. The next article is titled, Dear Black Woman, It's Okay If You Need a Day Off from Fighting Racism. I was 19 years old the first time a white person called me a nigger. I was a sophomore in college, working as a resident assistant on an all-male floor of my college dorm. My position sometimes meant having to write disciplinary reports when my peers were drinking underage or violating noise rules. A white boy who couldn't stomach the fact that a Black woman had some type of authority over him carved the words "Nigger RA" in the wall of the men's bathroom because I'd written him up for throwing a wild party in his room. The dean decided to pursue criminal charges against the resident, and he was swiftly expelled. But the school also tried to hush the incident to avoid bringing itself bad press while a major movie being filmed on the campus. The traumatic memory of that experience is like a scar, faded but never disappeared. No matter how subtle or extreme the case may be, most Black women I know have had some sort of experience with racism, and that's because there is no corner of society where it doesn't exist. From the emergency rooms where doctors don't believe our pain, to the boardrooms where our competence is questioned, Black women are constantly having to fight twice as hard to get even half of the respect we deserve. In addition to fighting for our lives, for ourselves, we're constantly having to fight for others too. The climate of what's happening across the world only shines a brighter light on that. Following the deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, the world has suddenly erupted in upheaval, demanding that their killers be brought to justice. People from all walks of life who were once indifferent to racism suddenly have awakened to the reality that it exists systematically and not just situationally. They're finally rolling up their sleeves to help Black women do the work we've already been doing for centuries. Yes, being a Black woman is hard, but hear me, sister, you deserve to rest. Systemic racism not only attacks our well-being, finances, and physical safety, it also attacks our spirit. We're tasked with constantly proving that we're human and deserve the same rights as anyone else. That has the potential to deteriorate our mental health and plant seeds of trauma. Currently, there is a laundry list of diseases that disproportionately affect Black women. We have a 1 in 9 chance of developing breast cancer. We are more likely to die from cervical cancer, a totally preventable disease. We are 2 to 6 times more likely to die from complications of pregnancy than white women. And 1 in every 2 Black women in the United States has heart disease. Often the blame is put on factors like lack of access to health care and poor nutrition. While those reasons are valid, we don't always mention the silent killer that is stress. Stress is the leading cause of racial, socioeconomic health disparities. A 2018 report by the American Psychological Association found that chronic stress was more prevalent in Black people, 22% of whom live at or below the poverty level. Not being able to meet ends meet, combined with continuous discrimination we're exposed to, makes our bodies more vulnerable to stress-induced illness and shortens our lifespan. Of course, we didn't need a formal study to believe that the stress of being Black is palatable. While shouldering the burden of racism, many of us are the heads of our households. We're running businesses and pursuing degrees. We're fighting for equal pay. We're wives, mothers, and pillars in our community. We're teaching our children how to survive in a world that will judge their skin color before their character. We're learning to nurse our wounds in a world that routinely devalues us. Just as Rome wasn't built in a day, neither was the structure of white supremacy. As we seek to dismantle its brick by brick, give yourself permission, Black woman, to take a break. Use your anger as fuel for change, but unplug from social media and turn off the news when you feel your anger and sadness has become debilitating. Practice deep breathing exercises when you feel yourself being bogged down with the responsibility to make your life and the lives of your people better. Remember that you are only human and you have a right not to be okay. These are all things I wish I'd done when I became a hate crime victim in my college years. At the time, my instinct was to soldier on, bury it, and put on a strong face. It's what my mother and her mother did with their pain. But through educating myself and healing, I've learned that it is not the wrong to be vulnerable. It is also not wrong to take a mental health break every now and again. It doesn't mean you don't care, and it doesn't mean the job won't get done. It just means that for right now, you're taking care of you. After all, you can't pour from an empty cup. The next article is titled, The Long-Term Mental Health Effects for Black People Living Through the Coronavirus and Racial Trauma. The truth is, many Black people have been experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, for decades, many most likely even undiagnosed. The traumatizing role that slavery, racial oppression, and violent hatred towards Black people has been embedded in our minds, making it difficult for us to mentally manage additional mental stressors. But still, we do it day after day. While many people associate post-traumatic stress disorder solely with being the result of experiencing war, it's actually a chronic psychiatric disorder that occurs in people who have experienced or witness a traumatic event, such a global pandemic and racial injustice. But what happens when they both occur at the same time? How do we compartmentalize the pain and the trauma we've been experiencing since birth? Case after case of violence against Black Americans at the hands of the police officers has led to national daily protest, yet simultaneously, Black people are still dealing with a global virus that is disproportionately impacting and killing our community. Seems unbearable, doesn't it? One study of racial discrimination and psychopathology across three U.S. United States ethnic minority groups found that Black people experience significantly more instances of discrimination than either Asian or Hispanic Americans. Though, if we are keeping it real, we do not need a study to tell us that. Furthermore, those Black people who experienced the most racism were significantly more likely to experience symptoms of PTSD as well. A clinical psychology doctoral extern at Capital Center for Psychotherapy and Wellness in Washington, D.C., Nyasha Chikawar, an author of children's book Giraffe, asks for help, explores the long-term effects that our current climate will have on our psyche, so it's important to take care of yourself sooner rather than later. An increase in mental health issues. It almost goes without saying that we will see an increase in individuals who are not only struggling with their mental health, but also those who are actually seeking out help. The important thing is to do something about it as soon as you recognize it. For individuals who were already dealing with mental health concerns, the pandemic has exacerbated those issues, says Chikawar. For others, new issues are surfacing as many are dealing with unemployment, financial concerns, grief and loss, illness, a lack of motivation and productivity. The added stress of the continued injustices against Black people only adds to the number we'll see. After offering a free support group for Black people recently, my inbox has been inundated with emails from individuals wanting to join and seeking affordable therapy. Increased need for culturally sensitive mental health services. The good news, once life returns to normal, more people than ever will seek out therapy. The bad news, more people than ever work out therapy. With this increase in mental health issues, more individuals will be seeking therapy. Everyone should have access to mental health services. However, depending on where you live, it may be difficult to locate a therapist who looks like you or one who can understand your experiences as a Black person in this country. Many of us have to visit multiple therapists to find the right fit and also contend with wait lists and insurance coverage. Increased risky behavior. Many of us are itchy for the day when outside will open back up. But while states are currently going through phased reopenings, the new normal will be a lot different from life as we previously know it. But despite the urge to make risky choices, it's important to consider against it. Feeling isolated for so long can take a toll on anyone, as there have been individuals quarantined without a significant other, family, or roommates. Isolation paired with the triggers of racial trauma and the news and on timelines makes it impossible that many will adopt the "you only live once" attitude. I have seen that with Black men in particular, putting themselves in dangerous situations, example, fighting, reckless driving, is a more socially acceptable reaction than being sad or showing various emotions. Increased intentional self-care. A poet and activist, Audre Lorde, once said, "Caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare." With the increased exhaustion from fighting for justice and maintaining a sense of normalcy during the pandemic, we will see more intention around self-care, says Chikawar. Black people are doing yoga, meditating, going to therapy, gardening, utilizing acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative methods of care more than before. Many of my clients are also detaching from their phones, walking, cycling, and spending more time in nature to get a breather from reality. The next article is titled, "Why Black Women's Trauma doesn't look like everyone else's. As if being Black in America wasn't already hard, the recent instances of police brutality have turned an even brighter spotlight on our pain. Being both Black and a woman brings about a heightened struggle that was recently explained in the Essence Town Hall on Black Women and Trauma, hosted by Relationships and Wellness Director Charlie Penn. When asked how Black women deal with trauma in the workplace, psychologist Dr. Sherry Blake explains that triggers for us are at every turn. I can't think of my many settings where we're not triggered, work being one of them, Dr. Blake says. With that said, it's the little things sometimes. It's comments, it's the responses you get, it's the constant struggle. You have to be more and better, you have to achieve more, and you look around to your counterparts, and of course, that's not the same measuring stick for them. So we get triggered and reminded that we're Black, not only by our skin color, but by others' reactions around us. Dr. Sherry goes on to say that racism is embedded in American culture, and that the best strategy for us is to learn how to shield ourselves from absorbing these negative interactions. If we soak it all in and hold it in, we start believing what they say, and we can't afford to do that, she says. In spite of the rage and anger, we know who we are. We have to be able to tell ourselves we're only going to respond to those things that we know matter. What people say is very painful, but what is it they're doing, and what are we going to do with that? The next article is titled, Michael B. Jordan Commits to Hiring Private Security Instead of Police During Passionate Protest Speech. Michael B. Jordan was among the millions who protested racial discrimination and inequality last weekend after the murder of George Floyd. And the actor specifically addressed what Hollywood needs to do in order to become even more diverse and inclusive. We are in the heart of Hollywood right now, one of the world's most powerful industries, and I am an active member of that. And they need to go on notice. Jordan began Saturday in Los Angeles, according to a video shared on social media. We have to stop hiring police. We have to cut off their support. That's why I'm committing to hiring private security at all my events. Private security only. The Just Mercury star added, anybody that deals with me, if you have racist beliefs, if you have a racist bone in your body, if you're not with me, if you don't stand with me and people that look like me, you don't need to be with me. Jordan, who also has his own production company, Outlier Society Productions, is already leading the change in Hollywood by adopting an inclusion rider, which requires filmmakers to meet diversity benchmarks and ensure that minorities get opportunities within the entertainment industry. Still, he wants Hollywood to do more. I have used my power to demand diversity, but it's time the studios and agencies do the same, Jordan added. You committed to a 50-50 gender parity in 2020. Where is the challenge to commit to Black hiring, Black content led by Black executives, Black consultants? Are you policing our storytelling as well? So let us bring our darkness to light, the actor added before telling those listening that voting has never been more important than it is today. Jordan is among many celebrities who protested after the murder of George Floyd at the hand of a white police officer named Derek Chauvin. They included Jamie Foxx, Nick Cannon, Insecure star Kendrick Sampson, Star Wars star John Boyega, Golden State Warriors player Stephen Curry, and his wife Aisha Curry, to name a few. The next article, the Grammys attempt to be inclusive by removing Urban from one category. The Grammy Awards has finally decided to tweak some outdated rules and categories, including renaming the Best Urban Contemporary Album category to Best Progressive R&B Album. Rolling Stone reports that the revamped category will include the more progressive elements of R&B and may include sample and elements of hip-hop, rap, dance, and electronic music. It may also include production elements found in pop, Europop, country rock, folk, and alternative, the Recording Academy said via statement. This should make artists like Tyler, the Creator, offer a slow hand clap since he had mixed feelings about taking home the Best Rap Album Grammy for his genre-bending IGOR. Earlier this year, Tyler shared his mixed feelings about the win. It sucks that whenever we, and I mean guys that look like me, do anything that's genre-bending, they always put it in a rap or urban category. Tyler said to reporters after his first Grammy win, "I don't like that urban word. That's just a politically correct way to say the N-word to me." The Best Urban Contemporary category was introduced in 2012 and has been criticized in the past and most recently during hashtag The Show Must Be Paused Blackout Tuesday, created by Jamila Thomas and Brianna Agamond. Everyone knows that urban is code for black, which is why black music executives declared that urban is an inappropriate, archaic, and irrelevant term, given that R&B and hip-hop are dominant money-making genres. It also helps that Republican Records just scrapped the word altogether when describing their artist. Well, we have now run out of time. I am Avery Lewis, reading for the NC Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138, 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.
The purpose of the North Carolina Reading Service is to connect people who are blind and print impaired with each other, their families, and the community by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. For more information about the North Carolina Reading Service, visit us online at ncreadingservice.org. You can also give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. 5138, the North Carolina Reading Service. We breathe words into your life.